Trip is brought to you by our good friends at River. River is a Bitcoin company that has an exchange, has mining, has Lightning API that you can build on. I was often referring to it as a Bitcoin exchange. It certainly does have an exchange, but it's more than that. It's a Bitcoin company. If you're looking to acquire Bitcoin, you're looking at the banking crisis unfolding right now here in the United States, and you're thinking, there's a lot of counterparty risk there. Maybe I should get an asset that eliminates that counterparty risk. Bitcoin. Go to River. River.com/TFTC. They have the exchange. You can DCA. If you DCA into Bitcoin, you won't pay any fees on those buys. If you hold Bitcoin on River, they don't recommend it. They want you to send it to cold storage that you control. But if you do hold it on River, you can have the peace of mind knowing that your Bitcoin is 100% reserved on the exchange and is held in a multi-sig wallet. You can send and receive over Lightning to River. And again, if you want to build on Lightning, they have River Lightning Services, that their API. So go check it out. Maybe you have a Bitcoin exchange that you're using, but you should be using a Bitcoin company, River. You get the exchange plus a bunch of value-added services. River.com/TFTC. This RIP was also brought to you by our good friends down the hall, Unchained Capital. They're here to help you eliminate single points of failure in your custody model, help you eliminate the third-party custody risk that exists in the incumbent banking system that is taking a lot of people out right now. They have their Vault product, which is a 2 or 3 multi-sig wallet where you hold two keys. Unchained holds one. As long as you have your two keys, you have permissionless access to your Bitcoin. It's a beautiful thing. If you're ever in a pinch and need Unchained to be the second in the 2 or 3 signature quorum, they're there for you. They have a consultation service that'll walk you through everything, get you hardware wallets, get you set up, get you comfortable. Go to unchained.com/consultation. Tell them that TFTC sent you. You'll get $50 off that service. They also just released an inheritance protocol. They have a lending desk, an IRA product, a financial company of the future, Unchained Capital. Go to unchained.com/consultation. Learn about everything they have going on there. This report was also brought to you by good friends at CrowdHealth. CrowdHealth is here to help you reimagine how you pay for your health care. Health insurance is notoriously opaque, impersonal, egregiously expensive. I was on Cobra paying an insane amount. I switched to CrowdHealth. It's not health insurance. It's a different way of doing healthcare, paying for your healthcare. It's significantly cheaper. I have my family of four on it. We're paying way less than we were on Cobra. So if you're an individual who unfortunately just got laid off in these tech sector layoffs and you're using Cobra right now, I know from personal experience how expensive it is. I would seriously consider CrowdHealth. It's a great community. You pay a monthly fee into a dedicated account that builds up. If you ever have a healthcare expense, you bring the bill to CrowdHealth. They negotiate it lower for you. You go to the doctor, say, hey, we can pay you in cash right away. Let's get a cheaper price. And the doctor likes that. They're like, hey, I'm getting paid cash right away. Sure, I'll lower the price. You pay the first $500 of that bill, and then the rest gets crowdfunded by the CrowdHealth community. They have a Bitcoin community where you'll pay your monthly fee. It'll build up in your dollar account. And then after a certain amount of months, you'll begin to stack Bitcoin along that dollar account as well. So you can speculative attack your future healthcare cost. Another thing to mention about CrowdHealth is it is a community of healthy individuals. You do have some metrics you have to hit to get into the community. And because of that, the overall BMI of CrowdHealth users is lower than the national average. And overall healthcare costs for the CrowdHealth community is lower than the average American health insurance plan. So go check it out. Join crowdhealth.com/TFTC. Use that code. You're going to get $99 a month for the membership fee for the first 6 months. Join crowdhealth.com/TFTC. Last but not least, this RIP was brought to you by our good friends at Bitcoin Talent Co. They're here to help you find a job or find talent. A recruiting firm built by Bitcoiners for Bitcoiners. So they understand the different companies in the space looking for talent and what they need, whether it's Lightning, a Lightning developer, or somebody who knows UX around Lightning, or somebody's working on multisig at the protocol layer. They know what they need to go out and find. And then on the talent side of things, if you're out there, you're in the tech sector, you're in the banking sector, but you're a Bitcoiner, you don't know how to get in, go to bitcointalent.co. Tell them the TFTC sent you. If you're a company, hit them up. If you're talent looking to get into a company, hit them up. It's a beautiful thing. Enjoy this RIP, freaks. Take care.
You've had a dynamic where money's become freer than free.
If you talk about a Fed just gone nuts, all the central banks going nuts.
So it's all acting like safe haven.
I believe that in a world where central bankers are tripping over themselves to devalue their currency, Bitcoin wins. In the world of fiat currencies, Bitcoin is the victor.
I mean, that's part of the bull case for Bitcoin.
If you're not paying attention, you probably should be.
So I'm guessing we're live.
Guess we're
Michael,
live.
You're sitting in my chair. This is weird. The tables have turned. Are you going to host this episode?
Definitely not going to host it. We should caveat that you asked me to come in here. I would never sit in another man's seat, but it was offered for the audio quality, so I obliged.
Yeah, that mic is much better than the Apple headphones you're going to put in. So for the sake of all the audiophiles listening to the show, I thought it was very important that you sit in the chair and use that mic.
It's really throwing me off. I don't know who to call Marty.
We sort of look alike.
It's a beautiful studio. I'm glad we're getting used while you're out of town.
I am as well. And I'm glad we're here doing this while I'm out of town. Freaks at home listening and cannot see what's going on the screen right now. I am in Philadelphia, joined by Jesse Myers and Michael Tanguma, who is sitting in my chair in Austin, Texas, to discuss the product that you guys launched today, the company, OnRamp. Very excited. I've been paying attention and watching you guys build this over the last 6 months. Disclosure, I'm an advisor to OnRamp as well. But I think it's a very important product and company to get out there that will really turn a lot of heads and really change the game of how institutional capital, high net worth individuals, family offices get exposure to Bitcoin, because it's something that they've been a bit apprehensive to do to date. And I think the solution that you guys have come up with at OnRamp could be a massive unlock for tons of capital to come into Bitcoin. So I guess before we jump in to the mechanics of OnRamp, how it works, and what you guys are building, we should dive deeper into this problem of why capital has been sitting on the sidelines. Why have people been afraid to get into Bitcoin? And I'll throw that to you, Jesse.
Yeah, it's a great point. And we've all kind of seen it playing out in the market. There's one problem of deciding that Bitcoin should be a part of your portfolio, or in the case of institutions, whether it should be a part of your treasury management. And that's hard enough, right? That's a hard thing to commit to get comfortable with. But then once you've done that, you have this additional step, this extra problem of how do you get exposure to Bitcoin? Do you take self-custody? Do you trust a custodian? Do you get exposure through some other vehicle that gives you approximate Bitcoin exposure, whether that's, you know, holding a Bitcoin mining company stocks or investing in the number of Bitcoin funds out there that are actually futures based or even options based contracts. So you're not actually holding Bitcoin, you're holding a contract that approximates Bitcoin. So, you know, if you're an institution, if you're a high net worth individual and you're thinking about deploying millions of dollars into Bitcoin, those are kind of your options right now. And obviously there's some major downsides with all of them, and no solution is perfect, but the current option set is very limited in its capacity to unlock the abilities, the attractive properties of Bitcoin, and why you're investing in it in the first place, and future-proof that investment too, to make it possible for you to take self-custody into the future. Because a lot of these current options, if you were to take self-custody into the future, you're hit with a taxable event because you don't actually own Bitcoin. You own something that approximates Bitcoin. And then when you decide, actually, we need to hold this thing ourselves, you have a taxable event because you're trading out of the thing that's almost Bitcoin, but not, and into Bitcoin. So that's a taxable event. And, you know, suddenly you've got a 30% hit on your Bitcoin holdings. So, you know, that right now there's not a great, there hasn't been a great option for for solving that problem of how do I get started in Bitcoin the right way while future-proofing what I, you know, what I might want to do and making it possible to take self-custody down the road. So that was kind of the problem that we've been noodling on or seeing, Michael and I in our respective roles before starting OnRamp Bitcoin. And that was kind of the starting point of why we decided to make a better solution for getting started in Bitcoin the right way.
Yeah, Michael, do you have any other pain points top of mind that Jesse maybe didn't mention that people have?
Yeah, I think a couple of things I've been reflecting on. You know, as you mentioned, we've been talking about this for a while, and it's been great to think about setting up this discussion and chatting through, you know, what we're working on, getting it out to the market, but then also reflecting on the path dependent nature of how we got here. And there's been a lot of pain in the market. There's been a lot of pain with us as individuals onboarding folks and having them lose funds. You do it weekly, you and Matt trying to, you know, explain, and some people are saved and others leave their Bitcoin on exchange or buying a product that trades at a discount to what the spot price is. And one of the things that when we were looking at this, you know, my background being at Unchained Capital and helping, you know, when I started, I think we had roughly 50 clients and we sit at close to 5,000 clients now. And one of the big points that came up was there was always this kicking and screaming with certain individuals that are not ready to hold cryptographic material. It was just a reason. And knowing the internal conversion rates and helping onboarding and building out that sales team, it's like, okay, there's a pain point here that individuals understand that, you know, custodial risk, centralization, but then there's still this problem of making this leap from they have their checking account, they have their Goldman Sachs account, but now in their mind, they're effectively, whether it's true or not, effectively holding gold underneath a mattress. And there's the other side of that, which we all know of, like, you know, custodial risk, centralization, and that there effectively had to be this like middle ground. And so that was the first layer. The second layer was starting to have conversations after, you know, naively thinking that we figured out the crypto/Bitcoin market with Grayscale, GBTC, BlockFi. Everybody thought these darlings were the people for the wave of this adoption, this next generation of money, however we want to refer to it. And the reality is the past 6 to 12 months, the board has been completely reset. From an entrepreneurial perspective, if you've been around, like, it's all up for grabs in my mind. And so realizing that all the folks that had the market lead basically gave it up, and then also having discussions with some of the largest institutions, knowing that they're coming into the market because large institutions do not want to face Coinbase. They do not want to face quote unquote Web 2, Web 3 versions, because it's no different than Coinbase than FTX to them. And realizing the likes of, you know, Citadel, Fidelity, and these companies are coming in, but then also hearing the chatter of what they're using on the back end. And the back end looks exactly what just blew up the past 6 to 12 months. It's all the same format, rehypothecation, centralization, because they still have the mental model of the old world. And so looking at that and having this thesis that in, let's call it 3 to 5 years, we're going to see the exact same thing that just happened, but orders of magnitude larger, unless we build something different. And that's effectively some of the, you know, calculus and ingredients that came into this kind of, you know, idea and me and Jesse, you know, deciding to pursue and attack this problem.
Yeah, I think it's very important. And I think you guys are putting a step forward that will change the dynamic of how future companies and products that give people access to Bitcoin will be built. I mean, Michael, you've seen this at Unchained, the idea of collaborative custody, a 2 or 3 multi-sig vault in which an individual holds 2 keys, Unchained holds 1, or on the lending product where Unchained holds the key, Kingdom Trust holds a key, or another third party, and then the user gets 1 key. This model of distributed keys is something we've talked about over the years, is the future of a financial monetary banking system built with Bitcoin at its core. And so I think this is a good opportunity to dive into the mechanics of how OnRamp, the product, works from a legal perspective. What is the structure of the actual company? What are people actually buying? And then how you guys leverage Bitcoin's native properties, particularly multi-sig, to give your clients a product that will give them peace of mind, and the ability to leverage Bitcoin in a way that gives them confidence that their money is where they think it is.
Yeah.
Jesse, you want to kick off legal and I'll go into tech and multi-sig.
Yeah. I think that a little bit of background context here is probably helpful to start also of, as many people know, I've been running a fund in the Bitcoin space for the last 5 years. It started as an altcoin fund, got rocked in 2018, had to figure out why, realized, you know, oh, there's this whole deeper rabbit hole I was missing. It's all about Bitcoin. Shifted to get my investors just 100% exposure to Bitcoin. But in doing that, then my investors no longer needed me as a hedge fund manager holding their assets. And so I had to have conversations with them about, you guys don't need me anymore. You can withdraw your Bitcoin and hold it yourselves and not pay these fees. And about a quarter of them took me up on that. And for three quarters of them, they didn't want to deal with that. They weren't ready for that responsibility, the burden of having to keep cryptographic materials safe and secure permanently, always at all times. And just the learning curve involved of, you know, having to know enough to know, to be confident that you're doing everything you need to be doing. So they didn't want to have to take that on. So they wanted to keep paying me fees to do this. And so that to me spoke to this market need, of there's a lot of people out there who are not yet ready for, taking self-custody or, you know, they're not yet far enough down the learning journey to be ready to do that themselves. But a hedge fund structure isn't the right structure to do this. And so Michael and I were talking about, you know, what would be the ideal vehicle for doing this, and landed on the solution that we have for OnRamp, which is a trust model, much like how GLD is structured, where it's a single asset commodity, a single commodity investment vehicle, which greatly reduces the legal lift involved of this asset and allows for investors to have the keep the asset on their balance sheet in the form of trust units, rather than having to be a part of an LLC where you have to get K-1s every year and include those in your taxes and all of the headaches involved in that. So that was the legal structure and the genesis, you know, the reason for that legal structure and how we arrived at that. And I think this sort of speaks to all of the decisions made about how we set up OnRamp were to create the best vehicle for, you know, the lowest headaches and the best versatility for what investors need now and into the future. The other big part of that is how this trust structure enables in-kind redemptions further down the road. So, you know, not there, it's not an immediate thing. It's after 12 months, you're able to do in-kind redemptions. And that is not a taxable event because you're going from 100% Bitcoin asset and then taking that possession yourself. So that's not a taxable event, which is different from how most of the Bitcoin funds out there are structured today. And I think a big differentiator and a big pain point solved in terms of why the current set of options is not ideal for people who are looking to deploy capital, but not ready to take on self-custody and looking for a place to get started, learn more, get comfortable with what they need to be doing, and then eventually take self-custody.
Yeah, I think the looking at the market, and I think it's a product of being so early that all the funds are effectively, and it took me some learning as we were going through this process and looking at the funds that exist, and there's a couple downsides before going into the mechanics of the, you know, the technical aspects of the custody. But the one of them is that they're all closed-end funds, as Jesse referenced. So if you want to get exposure, you're going in, you're hoping that they're going to track the spot price of BTC. And if you ever want to get liquidity, you're having to sell to taxable event. And there's this other thing that I didn't appreciate as much until understanding what Jesse was doing with his fund. And it's something we do at Unchained, is really on the education side. Because when the price is running, everybody's buying into Bitcoin and whatever product. But when it goes the opposite way, the right move that we understand after looking at this is, this is the last trade that you're doubling down when it goes the other way, instead of, you know, basically selling. And all these funds are not prepared to talk through why Bitcoin is this asset. To do that, where if you go look at any of their pages, won't name any names, but if you look at any of the major four funds, five funds, they all have on the first two pages baskets of cryptocurrencies from Solana, NFT. And I was like, holy crap, like this is the first thing people see trying to get in on the institutional high net worth side. And it's like, okay, well, education matters, because you want to help not only them understand what they're buying, so when the price is moving against them, they're actually you know, increasing their exposure, but then they're also getting educated to the properties of Bitcoin, which they get kneecapped when you go through these products. Whether it's Coinbase or you're going through a fund product, you're effectively getting like 50% of my mind of BTC's properties. I won't try to make the analogy, but whatever, if you took 50% of the properties that made gold gold, and that's what you would be buying if you were buying like a spot exposure. We all know gold in the paper markets. And so this like idea had been percolating in my mind for a few years at Unchained. I brought it up to Parker. And then when me and Jesse started chatting and finding out what he was doing, I was like, oh, okay, so this is the model. Because independent of that, I had been thinking about custody. And in my own opinion, I don't think that custody gets talked about enough in the Bitcoin world, or just in the landscape of venture, in the sense of, we assume custody's figured out. In my mind, it's so far from being figured out, because what exists today is effectively somebody putting Bitcoin under their mattress, like a hardware device, or trusting individuals, or you go to Coinbase, you know, Fidelity, whoever the third party is. And we all know as Bitcoiners, you know, we know what happened with gold, and the centralization risk is real. And both of those can't work if we're going to bring in trillions of dollars. Like, there's not enough institutions willing to do the gold under the mattress. And so there has to be this middle ground. And so if you think about it in just conceptual, spot Bitcoin tracks exactly the spot price. Nothing would happen with GBTC. The ability to take redemptions or possession of the Bitcoin when you want to. And then when we get into the technical aspects, multi-party custody. So basically having three institutional grade key holders, qualified custodian being one of them, Kingdom Trust, holding the keys and requiring a quorum, a majority of a two of three set to move the asset. And so you're effectively getting what you would get with Coinbase or any other institutional grade key holder, but you're getting it times three. And the requirement would be to have two of three signed to move the asset into possession that you would want, or just to actually sell if you wanted to get your dollars back. And that obviously has a lot of ramifications on centralization from a hacking rehypothecation, because it's inherently on chain because of multi-sig properties, the ability to audit. There's a laundry list of reasons why this is a superior format in our mind. And so we're really excited to kind of get this. And I guess the last part to say is that the key holders, it's Unchained Capital, OnRamp, and Kingdom Trust, which again is a qualified custodian. I don't know if this should be a disclaimer, but I'll say it. Ryan Radloff, CEO of Kingdom Trust, pioneer in the space. Kingdom Trust are the first qualified custodian to hold Bitcoin. They're really excited about moving this forefront of keys and getting rid of the honeypots. And Ryan is a visionary in the sense that he wanted to be a part of this, and we're really excited to have him on board. And the idea is to really expand this key network to build on that. These are our key partners now, but the idea is that individuals will be familiar with these key agents, but in a future state, they'll have their own key agents that they want. They'll have their own bank. They'll have their own financial institution. And this is, in our mind, how Bitcoin scales in a broader sense, because of how trust is built within our traditional banking system. Like, we're not going to recreate the wheel. We're just repurposing it for a Bitcoin standard.
Yeah, I think Michael touched on such an important part of like the ethos of where this has come from. Is pretty much every company that's tried to tackle Bitcoin custody has been focused on self-custody, and rightly so. Like, that is the gold standard. That's how people should be, you know, that's the goal everybody should be aiming for. But, you know, as Michael has seen talking with prospective clients at Unchained, and what I've seen with three quarters of my investors not wanting to take self-custody. There's a big portion of the market that wants a solution now that doesn't require them to learn about self-custody at, you know, at right as they're just coming around to the fact that they should own some Bitcoin. You know, that's a big ask. They want a solution now that is going to be, you know, reduces counterparty risk as much as possible, which is why the multi-party custody does that in a tremendous way, in even going so far as to like greatly minimize the risk of like a 6102 situation. And then also future proofs them for, you know, when they're ready to take self-custody, they can, because it's not going to trigger a taxable event. So, you know, our philosophy is that as Bitcoin, this little blueberry of an asset on the global asset landscape, as it, you know, it gets hooked into the city water main, as Trace Mayer used to say, of all the value in the world flowing into this more attractive asset than anything else that's out there, that connection, that conduit, that pipe needs to be built for the needs of the incoming capital. You know, what are their needs as they're on-ramping to Bitcoin? What do they really need to have in place, and what kind of guide do they need to have to welcome them into the space and point them in the right direction and help get them educated in the right way? And when you look at the solutions that are out there right now, these funds, Michael won't name the names, but I'll mention some of them. You know, you've got GBTC, the whole Grayscale environment, you've got Bidwise and some others. These are businessmen who created products because there was demand for them. And that included crypto, right? They built crypto products because people wanted exposure to crypto. Whereas what we are doing is building the right Bitcoin on-ramp for people to get them started in Bitcoin the right way, because Bitcoin is the only thing they should be messing with. And that's what we're here to do.
Yeah. No, I mean, I've always described it when I try to explain on-ramp to people, I'm like, it's GBTC done the right way. Like, you shouldn't be buying like shares and some synthetic exposure that you can't call on in the future. Like, if you're getting Bitcoin, this is something Matt and I always talk about. Of course, we highly recommend self-custody, but I mean, as you two have described and as I've experienced myself, there is a large part of the market of potential Bitcoin users that are sitting on the sidelines because they're so freaked out by managing keys. And bring it back to discussions that we've had throughout the years, Michael, like the future system is going to be built on these multi-sig quorums. And so this multi-party, multi-institution product that you guys have built at OnRamp, I think, is an incredible unlock for this set of the market that wants to get in but is petrified. They don't want it sitting on Coinbase. They don't want it sitting under their mattress. And it's crazy that it took this long for something like this to come to market, but I'm extremely excited that it's here because you guys are doing it the right way, in my mind. Like, yeah. Just leveraging Bitcoin's native SIG properties is right. Probably the most underappreciated aspect of Bitcoin as it pertains to building out financial products.
Yeah, there's
people want exposure to Bitcoin.
Yeah, there's something that I know he gets a lot of slack in our circles, but Balaji said recently that until Bitcoin, there was no such thing as a billionaire, that nobody could actually take their wealth outside of like a financial, you know, government system and actually own it. And so now, to your point, you have this asset that has all the properties that we know, but then also you can split up the distribution with keys and individuals or entities, businesses that you trust. And what we know, and I don't know if it gets discussed enough, is that people want exposure to this space. Like, even if they don't know they want Bitcoin, they know digital assets. They see everybody making money and the buzz. It punches outside of its class from a mind share, even though we're, you know, whatever, a trillion, a little over, a little less, depending on where the price is, as a total asset, not including Bitcoin and crypto. But the idea is there's like 200 million supposedly Bitcoin holders. But the reality is, and we always talk about this, like 1 million to 10 million actually have material exposure to Bitcoin, meaning over $10,000. And if you go ask anybody, like your grandmother or somebody that's, you know, knows somebody in the space or has heard of it, they basically say like, eh, I'm kind of interested, or I have like that $100 or $1,000 on Coinbase, but they never can put material capital because it ends up in two scenarios in their mind, because they've heard enough of it, is it ends up in a landfill, whatever that hardware stick or hard drive, or it gets hacked by North Korean hackers. Funny enough, they just put a report out that $1 billion, I think, was stolen by North Korean hackers last year alone. And so like in our mind, it's like there needs to be better solutions so people feel more comfortable to get the money to unlock that capital. And so the reality is, if this is a product that is makes sense and unlocks value for the Bitcoin ecosystem, this is the first like step forward, but this will be a standard from institutions, from funds, that eventually, like the idea of a consumer or an individual going to an entity, a business, and saying, well, how do you custody your Bitcoin? Is it by yourself? Like, are you susceptible to my server between my phone and your server, Coinbase? Because that happens all day long, even though nobody hears about it, people's Bitcoin's taken. And so that reality of having multiple keys and whatever the quorum is, somebody holding one or none, in our opinion, this is how Bitcoin scales ultimately. So we're excited to, you know, kick off that process.
Yeah. And so to take a step back for everybody listening who's heard what we've described here, so like, all right, what is this? You buy shares in the on-ramp trust, correct? And then with those shares, you're buying Bitcoin that gets locked up in a 2 or 3 multi-sig. Unchained holds a key, on-ramp holds a key, Kingdom Trust holds a key.
Yeah, that's correct. So, you know, if somebody is interested in, you know, getting a Bitcoin allocation, they would go through our onboarding process, full, you know, the KYC AML, check the boxes on all that, accredited investor. Then they're onboarded, they send money to OnRamp, that gets executed at market leading lowest transaction cost possible via Unchained's execution desk, and then put directly into a multi-party collaborative custody vault. And this is what we've been talking about, of the keys for that vault. There's three keys. And for anyone not familiar with collaborative custody, it's like there's, you know, like you've seen the movies when there's the nuclear codes and then you have to turn the keys, you know, multiple keys at the same time. There are three different keys. And to move any of the assets in that vault, you need to have two of those keys at least agree and sign a transaction. And so since each of those keys are held by a different institutional holder, and what we've set up is OnRamp is holding one, Unchained is holding another, and Kingdom Trust, a qualified custodian in the traditional asset space, is holding the third. Those are the key holders. No single institution there can control the Bitcoin in that vault. It has to go through the process of the collaborative custody process that Unchained and others have established over the last 5 years and gotten to a really, really solid place for, you know, these new use cases to be developed on top of. So that's the degree of custody that you're talking about here, which is very different from the traditional world where you build your fortress and you hold, you know, the assets safely within your fortress, whether that's like Fidelity or whatever. Because Bitcoin has this property, because it's a digital asset and has multi-sig built into it, that we are able to leverage this collaborative custody model to greatly reduce counterparty risk, because it's shared between three different institutions that all have their responsibility of, you know, doing right by the end owner of the assets, you know, and legally, and there are well-established, you know, through a well-established agreement of here are the rights and responsibilities of each party involved. So that's the flow of money coming in for the investor. And then what the investor holds is trust units, which are backed one-to-one by Bitcoin. So one on-ramp Bitcoin trust unit is backed by one Bitcoin, and of course fractional units in Bitcoin. And then that sits in that vault until an investor is prepared to either redeem in dollars or withdraw their Bitcoin to a different custody solution, whether that's self-custody or something else that they choose, in which case they initiate that redemption process, and the Bitcoin is then signed by two of the three institutions to be moved to the new destination for the investor.
Yeah, this is something every GBTC holder would like the ability to do right now.
Exactly. And that's what's, I think that, a big part of where this came from is my frustration. I know Michael feels the same way of like, what are these existing products like doing? They're set up. A friend of mine likes to call them the roach motels, where the money comes in, but it can never leave because you're going to get hit with this big taxable event. And GBTC has its own issues with the discount to NAV because you're not allowed to redeem it. So you can't maintain, the one-to-one price because it has to float on the secondary market because it's all trapped there. And so every investor in GBTC would like to be able to redeem their Bitcoin. If they were able to do that right now, they would make 35%. There's a 35% discount, so more than 35% going up. And they're not allowed to. They could be, but it's written into the GBTC contract that GBTC doesn't have to do that, and they don't plan on doing that, and they're never going to do that. And so there should be a better solution, a solution built by Bitcoiners with Bitcoin's properties at the forefront for Bitcoin to help new people get into Bitcoin the right way.
Yeah, there's a fun part of we're capitalists and we want to make money, but there's a really nice part of talking about this now, and we've been talking about it before, but the reality is like we all win if this is successful and other people adopt this. So whether it's somebody coming in and saying, there's management fees associated with this, it's under 1%, but the reality is somebody says, well, why don't I go to Unchained Capital, Casa, and hold my own keys? And we're like, yes, please. I will introduce you directly to somebody on the client solutions team, the best people in the world to onboard you to hold your own keys, because that's important. Like that is the most important thing in our mind for Bitcoin, is having the decentralization of obviously hash rate, but also private key ownership, which again, I don't think is talked about enough. And then the reality is, but then to Jesse's point, the folks that aren't ready, well, let us be the on-ramp and educate you. And when you are ready, then we can hand that off and prepare you to whether it's Unchained, your own self-custody. And there's different levels of this. I think of like MicroStrategy is a great example, who, these firms come in major size, and they may be at a large institution. They may be at these honeypots, these centralized custodians. But the reality is at some point they're going to get uncomfortable with that because of balance sheet risk of what we've seen, insolvencies. Are they going to be made whole? And maybe they don't use an on-ramp or Unchained. They probably just develop their own custody in-house. It's something we've always talked about. It's like, well, why doesn't MicroStrategy just build their own custody model? They're going to have so much Bitcoin in a certain world that like Saylor is going to want to control and have his own team be a part of that versus outsourcing it. Because if you can't trust your own people, why can you trust Coinbase? And so this idea is that you help people get to the place that they're at, but then you don't lock them into this model that's an AUM game or the properties where you're going against it, because that's basically how you get wrecked, right? We've seen it over time. Like the second you go against the inertia and the equilibrium of the natural state of order of things, which is basically what BlockFi, FTX, GBTC, all did, you just end up a zero or on the way to being a zero. I guess Grayscale's still alive, but yeah.
To build on what Michael is saying, I think there's a couple of the features here of like having a collaborative custody on-chain model here, where we are holding Bitcoin on-chain in a vault that no one of the three key holding institutions can control. That prevents many of the temptations that some of these other cautionary tales recently have succumbed to, of first and foremost rehypothecation. So if you are like a BlockFi You build this business around bringing in a bunch of Bitcoin and then lending it out. And you generate 8-10% on that Bitcoin because it turns out you're lending it to Three Arrows Capital or somebody like that, and they're promising you 8-10% if they can just borrow your Bitcoin because they're gonna go crush it in altcoins. Like that's who BlockFi was dealing with. And then BlockFi is promising the actual owner of that Bitcoin, we'll give you 6% of the 10% we're making. And that's BlockFi's business model, rehypothecating your Bitcoin. And of course, they told you it was safe. And of course, it turned out to not be safe. Who they were dealing with had the veneer of professionalism and risk management, Three Arrows Capital. But of course, that was not the case. So in BlockFi's situation, if you know a user is using BlockFi, they're giving their keys, they're giving their Bitcoin to BlockFi and saying, do with it whatever you want, basically. I just want to get a 6% return. And that wrecked a bunch of people. And that kind of risk management is not something that an institution can tolerate or accept. And so there should be this better solution. And by leveraging Bitcoin's intrinsic properties here, having the Bitcoin stored on chain in a manner where no single key holder can control it, can possibly rehypothecate it, that just provides a better level of assurance, a better risk management, because that temptation is completely gone. You know, even if OnRamp or a company that does this same sort of model wanted to rehypothecate, they literally couldn't. And that's an important distinction for anyone who's considering their options about how to get allocation in Bitcoin without taking self-custody yet.
Yeah. So let's paint a picture of how you guys see this launch playing out in terms of, like, so how much capital flowing into Bitcoin do you think this unlocks? Because obviously we've described the archetype of the high net worth individual, the institution that desperately wants to get in, but has delayed their exposure to Bitcoin because they're not happy with the solution. Yeah. It's not an OnRamp is on the market and they have the ability to get exposure to Bitcoin in an extremely trust minimized fashion. What types of inflow? And I don't want to force you guys to like be like, this is the best product ever, it's going to come in, but just as Bitcoiners, now that this exists, taking off your OnRamp hat and just putting on your Bitcoin thinker hat, like what kind of opportunities do you guys think this opens up?
I want to make a little distinction on the framing there of, like, you know, there are probably some people, decision makers at institutions who are desperate to get their institution to agree to an allocation to Bitcoin. But I think that there's an even greater set of people here who see Bitcoin and think that the barrier to getting in is too great. I'm not desperate to get in. I would like to be in, but I don't have time to learn about it. The activation energy to get into this thing is too great. And so I think that what OnRamp does is it lowers that barrier. It lowers that activation energy required for an individual or institution to get to that allocation. And so, yeah.
Yeah, I think Jesse and I were talking about this before. We've kept a limited circle of folks, advisors, group, and getting feedback in it. And it's been tremendous. It's been incredible, you know, introductions be made, family offices, there's discussions on larger institutions, thinking about how they hold Bitcoin on for other business opportunities and how they can market having a better custody model. So we see that unlocking in the existing market. But to your direct question and point, and this is something we saw at Unchained is, and to Jesse's point, that there's somebody that's on the edges and ready or almost ready, and a better custody solution and having the landscape painted in a logical framing by somebody they can trust helps that initial allocation. But then, as we know, nobody just comes in that really looks at the space and, you know, they come in a small way, but then they start looking and they realize, the unlock, at least what we've seen, and I think this will compound on it is it turns from being an ephemeral thing that's up in the air and in the cloud that can be taken from them at any moment or gone to zero, to it's tied and it becomes tangible. And whether you're going to an unchained capital and you hold two of three keys, those keys don't get up and walk away. They literally have to be plugged in and a digital signature has to be provided to move those assets. Similar to the institutions we're talking about, these aren't just keys sitting around. There's a whole procedure and process where one key has multiple pieces composed to come together just for one signature at one institution. This is how all custody works. And so this idea of getting different individuals comfortable with this, it's the first step in their allocation. But then as we think through, well, how do endowments come in? How do, because all these endowments or large institutions and pensions, they're all comprised of individuals that are all looking at the same problem. And they're right now either thinking about it or they'll be clients of OnRamp. And then the reality is whenever the price does whatever it does and the macro nature does whatever it does, they're going to start looking at, well, where do we go? And that CIO and that board is going to start looking at, well, this is how I custody it. And we're not naive enough to think that, well, these keys will be the only keys that will ever exist for OnRamp and say that this is what they'll feel comfortable with. They'll probably have relationships with the largest banking institutions and other trusted partners. And the reality is they'll probably lean on them. And whether through OnRamp or another vehicle, they'll say, hey, like, look at this model. Look at what it does. And maybe it's 3 of 5. You know, the future is yet to be painted, the picture. But the reality is, like, that's the kind of unlock. It starts building on what's already happened the past 12 plus years in Bitcoin space, what Unchained and other multi-sig providers have done. And now you can start seeing, you can, if you squint, you can see how, like, you're looking at what somewhat the existing old world looked like, but with institutions that have trust models, that have other business models that aren't reliant just on signing. So the game theory isn't, oh, well, if they go offline or move their funds, it's like, no, they have a whole multi-billion dollar business on other things. So they'd be blowing up their business if they didn't fulfill their obligation in this key signing. And that's how you can start seeing if, you know, basically how this plays out, whether it's lending, banking on Bitcoin, and everything else that gets financialized, you'll have these trusted parties holding keys.
Yeah. No, I think that's a really exciting part too, because it adds this whole social aspect to it as well. Because the big question will be like, well, why wouldn't Kingdom Trust and Unchained and or OnRamp and Kingdom Trust and or OnRamp and Unchained collude to move the Bitcoin out of the fund and steal it? And like you just said, Mike, like they have other business lines that their reputation depends on, and knowing parties involved at the three individual institutions to make up this multi-party custody, like it doesn't make sense. Number one, you'd have lawyers coming after you because it would technically be illegal. And then number two, like you said, this is just the beginning. The risks will get distributed even further as more key signers join to potential quorums so you guys can build on top of this.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, we recognize this early on at Unchained, getting the first key agent on the loan construct, you know, back in 17-18 was a difficult task. Think about, again, holding cryptographic material, having somebody come on board, what's involved in the process, the SLAs, and it's still not easy, but it's progressively like what's existed. If you think about, again, in the context of Unchained, onboarding individuals, like the keys don't get up and walk away. So there are no hacks with like multi-sig. If somebody does things and leaves keys and opens up their attack vectors, like that's a different situation, but there is no penetration between like a digital server and being able to log in or fish an individual. And so explaining that to other key holders, and as you go through this vision starting to come out, and when it becomes a standard, and this is like the view or our hope is that you, individuals that have, you know, certain credibility within other organizations, they can start leaning and they can start explaining this. Hey, you should look at this model. You should understand these properties. Because the reality is like, this is a big thing that actually is an interesting component where it's like, well, why haven't we seen this? And most people aren't in the Bitcoin only train. And so when you think about Fireblocks and Anchorage, all these providers aren't actually incentivized to do this. They know, they've said it. If you go listen to specifically the CEO of Fireblocks, he's referenced that multi-sig is superior to multi-party computation, MPC, not to be confused with multi-party custody. That's OnRamp's model. But that they have to support the long tail of crypto assets. And so you have this like new form of cryptography to support all the shitcoins that are created. And if you look like 3 weeks ago, MPC, they just had a huge bug. There was a bunch of money lost. And so you add that, but you have to support the long tail. So that's why there's not money to be made. It's open source. Anybody can spin up their own multi-sig vault caravan. You know, if you want to just do this without anybody knowing, you can go to Unchained's website, go to, I think it's the labs part. You can go build this. But the reality is that what's also interesting is multi-sig, similar to like a TCP/IP, is interoperable, and MPC is not. So it's a closed system. And that's what is really exciting, that you can start leveraging, again, 305, 405, whatever you want in your M of N, you can have other key agents. So it's not like, oh, I'm going to Citibank or Chase or BNY and say, hey, adopt this new standard. It's like you're basically able to plug and play. You'll probably have some, you know, sales engineer go in and basically, you know, bring it to them and show them the best practices and how to do it. But the reality is it's just one click away from them having their own key and XPub to sign, where nobody else can do that because they're playing in a closed sandbox, and which is really exciting, because then once that picks up steam, that just becomes a standard.
Yeah. Yeah. MPC, multi-party computation, the competitor to multi-sig, I think is, maybe red herring's the right term, but it is a distraction. And like you said, Michael, they're forced to focus on this technically deficient compared to multi-sig architecture, and because they're trying to service all the shit coins. And so I think, again, what you guys are doing, what Unchained's doing with this focus on Bitcoin, Bitcoin only, leveraging Bitcoin's native properties to build products is going to have very large benefits in the long run. Yes, short, medium term. Companies like Fireblocks providing the crypto space with custody, insufficient custody solutions via MPC, they may make some money in the short term, but in the long run, I think we all agree that multi-sig is the foundation that the future financial system will be built on.
Yeah, and to the question you had earlier, Marty, about what does this unlock? I've been thinking about the adoption curve that applies here as well, because we forget as Bitcoiners how early it is in the adoption curve. The classic adoption curve has your innovators, your early adopters, your early majority, late majority laggards. And the innovators typically is classically 2.5% of the population. And if we have 10 million meaningful Bitcoin adopters currently, that's a quarter of a percent or less of adoption of 8 billion people in the world. And so it's very, very, very early. We're still in the very early part of the innovators piece of the adoption curve. And why that's important is because the early majority, they don't think like the innovators. The innovators are tech forward by definition. They are prepared to, figure out what they don't know and take a leap. And that's not the psychology of the middle of the bell curve, not even the psychology of the next group, the early adopter group. And so it has to be easier. The friction of getting into Bitcoin and feeling confident about it, feeling like you're in a safe place, you are on the right track, you know what's going on and why you hold this thing, and you understand the reasons for why Bitcoin is an attractive asset in your portfolio. You understand the reasons why you're holding it in our case, a fund where it's on chain and you can take self-custody later. You understand that needs to be clearer and easier to understand. That whole process, all the friction of coming into Bitcoin can and does need to be reduced in order to make it possible for the middle of the bell curve to wrap their heads around what's required of them to take that leap and to feel comfortable and confident enough that they can do this without getting burned. And that's just an organic process. It's the free market playing out. Entrepreneurs will build better solutions in order to reduce the friction of people coming into Bitcoin. And this is, I think, a major part of this frontier of building custody solutions that are for people who are not yet ready for self-custody, but allow for self-custody in the future, is a big part of that the Bitcoin landscape has been missing.
Agreed. And part of that need for an easier solution is obviously part technical with multisig, but then it's part social too. People look for these social cues for these stamps of approval from certain types of institutions. And Jesse, right, you've mentioned it a couple of times, Kingdom Trust, one of the parties in the first multi-party collaborative custody model for OnRamp, is a qualified custodian. What is a qualified custodian, and why do people feel more comfortable when a qualified custodian is part of a particular financial product?
Great question. So in simplified terms, a qualified custodian is just an official designation that a particular company is, you know, in the good graces of the SEC to hold assets like stocks, you know, on their balance sheet, in their custody. And that's, you know, a whole bunch of hoops that have to be jumped through in terms of regulatory processes and verification and ongoing checks to maintain that status. And so there's, you know, this is from the traditional world of how traditional assets, stocks, and other securities are held. You know, when you have your brokerage account, when you've got your Schwab account, the numbers on the screen say that you have this many stocks. But where does that sit? It doesn't even sit with Schwab usually. It sits with some qualified custodian whose entire business is keeping that stuff safe, the actual assets. And that's what Kingdom Trust is and does. And so having them as a part of our custody solution is a landmark step, actually, because there's never been a qualified custodian that's a part of holding Bitcoin, as far as I know, as far as Michael, I think, as far as we know. And so this is a big step in the professionalization of how Bitcoin is held, and the multi-party collaborative custody model is a big part of making that possible.
Yeah, qualified custodian, I don't know if it's 1940s, I think it's 1940s Securities Act, but it's basically trust companies and banks have the status, and it's for traditional assets, like Jesse mentioned. But what it's turned into is basically a CYA for large institutions to, and this has actually came out, I don't think it's like official guidance, it's like forward guidance from, I think it was the SEC about now like financial advisors, wealth managers have to be required, or in the future state would be required if they were going to park client assets, to be with a qualified custodian, which limits where assets could be held. And that furthers the honeypot. So to Jesse's point, it's really important for Kingdom Trust to take this forward action. But what's interesting is that, you know, this term is actually kind of, I don't even know if I'm supposed to say this, but I will, it's like qualified custodian. The Bitcoin world is actually an unqualified custodian, because a lot of the times they're not even custodians, like in the physical sense of Bitcoin private keys. And so you get the CYA from the institution, but it's inherently like not state of the art. It's not best in class. And you end up using like a Gemini. Gemini is a qualified custodian. I believe they have a bank charter or a trust charter. And but it's still a single entity. And this goes to the point we talked about before of like the future of this asset as it's being built out by these institutions. It's leveraging qualified custodians, but they're all the same. There's no difference between the qualified custodian from a physical custody perspective than FTX. It's somebody sitting somewhere with servers, with private keys, either online or offline, that have somebody can steal it, hack it, rehypothecate, independent of the status. And it's very similar to the brand affinity too, because the obvious question, this came up earlier with Jesse and I, was like, well, what if I'm at name whatever big institution that has Bitcoin? Well, they're going to make me whole if they're hacked or they lose the Bitcoin. It's like, yes, until Bitcoin's too big and then it's a zero. Because that was what everybody said about BlockFi. It's like, oh, Peter Thiel and their investors. And it was something I thought about. It's like, BlockFi, could they really go to zero? Like, they have somebody to bail them out, the equity value. And that's just not the case. And so if we're all right about Bitcoin and its appreciation, the market cap eventually supersedes whatever the equity loss or value in that entity that gets rugged, whether because they're hacked, they misappropriate funds. And the reality is now you have a zero. And the last part on this is we talk about the path dependent nature of getting to this point. Like, I'd be curious on your guys' feedback. Like, I can't imagine a better time to be having this discussion, because we started talking about this 6 to 8 months ago, and it's been like every month it's been validated all the way to SVB. Like, you cannot trust a single institution with your money. It's just whether it's in the fiat world or in the Bitcoin world. And you just have this one form of money that happens to have programmability and scripting logic that you can segregate with multiple institutions that are trusted. So it's a great time.
Yeah, that can't be emphasized enough, that in the last 6 months, you can't trust any single institution to hold your money. And that's where this model just unleashes what Bitcoin natively has within it, of introducing this totally different philosophy to the traditional asset world. Of, you've, you know, in the past you've had your fortress, you've had your qualified custodian that's keeping everything nice and safe. But as Michael pointed out, like, that's not as safe as distributing your risk through a multi-party collaborative custody model, where it's a quorum rather than a single honeypot where all the assets are held. And so, you know, we should absolutely be moving into a world where we have this better solution in terms of risk mitigation, because it's in Bitcoin, it's been there. And now, you know, with Unchained Capital and other multi-sig providers, that this has been proven out and established, and it you know, on an individual, you know, for the individual market in particular. And now this can be rolled out for how institutional level custody is handled. You know, and it's only possible in Bitcoin because, well, it's possible with other cryptos, but it's natively in Bitcoin, and Bitcoin's going to win. So, you know, this is this first step towards a different industry standard for how Bitcoin is held for large institutions, or even just individuals who want to reduce their counterparty risk as much as possible without taking self-custody.
Yeah. I mean, Michael, you mentioned timing. I don't think the timing could be more perfect for a product like this, considering everything that's happened in crypto in the last 12 months. And then you mentioned the banking crisis as well. And on top of that, the price breaking 30K is definitely going to have some people have been sitting on the sidelines like, okay, I should probably have some urgency to get exposure to this in case it runs away from me again.
And it's going to. And now's the time, right? That we've got the next halving in gosh, it is now 12 months and 2 weeks until the next halving. And the supply shock of the halving will happen. You know, it'll be a smaller supply shock than previous halvings, because that's the mechanics of this thing. But a supply shock will happen. There will not be as much supply going out into the market to meet incoming demand. The price will drift upwards, and everybody will be wondering, is this going to happen again? Is the thing that happened in 2021 and in 2017 and in 2013 going to happen again? And I'm missing it right now. And people are going to pile in the way they did in 2021, the way they did in 2017, and the price is going to run. And here is this solution now to make it a little bit easier to position yourself in advance of those mechanics playing out a year from now.
Yeah. And then you have to imagine, too, this type of investor who's waiting on the sidelines to jump in. They see Coinbase getting Wells notices served to them. They see Kraken getting some attention from the SEC. They see the Gemini twins having to loan $100 million to their own company to bail out the earn users who got rugged by Genesis. I mean, the solutions that they have at their fingertips right now, whether it be Coinbase, Kraken, Gemini, that they would typically go to, you have to imagine there's doubts in their head that are holding them back from engaging with them. So again, I'm extremely excited that OnRamp exists, that it's doing it the right way. Michael, like you said, the board's been reset, and hopefully what OnRamp does, if it does anything, it just sets the standard for providing solutions like this to the market moving forward. We should not have Coinbase holding 1 million to 2 million Bitcoin that they control by themselves. We should not have GBTC offering hundreds of thousands or selling secondary shares of hundreds of thousands of Bitcoin's worth of exposure to their customers. They're at a 35% discount price to spot price right now. We should not have the FTX situation or the BlockFi situation and go all the way back to Mt. Gox. Like, this is something, a lesson that probably should have been learned back around Mt. Gox, but just has not come to market. And again, timing thing, maybe just took a lot of time for people to learn these lessons and appreciate the nature of multisig specifically.
FTX is a great example because of the hole as well. Like, we still don't fully know the shakeout of how much downward pressure exists that was meant to be spot Bitcoin that got washed for dollars. We know their hole was $1 billion. We don't know like the total of BlockFi, but as Jesse alluded to earlier, it's like the concept of this, and it'll expand over time, is there's a pooled vehicle or pooled, you know, address of assets, and we're still TBD, but on an institutional level of over X, you know, amount of dollars, you'll have segregated address. You can always audit and watch on chain. That's prevented from what happened at FTX, where you're giving dollars. You have a number on a screen that says you have 5 Bitcoin or whatever, but in reality, you have 0 Bitcoin. It was actually sold. It was actually double whammy because now you don't have Bitcoin. It was probably used as downward pressure to like sell into crypto or whatever. And yeah, to your point, where it's like it's the idea of like the standoff, where if you have a better product and the market requests it, that's how you go and get these other players to adopt it, because people move their flow. It's similar to the banks coming into the space. They see the flow going out one way to these exchanges and going into BTC, never coming back. And so that's how they started coming into the space, even though they didn't want to. Similar way, if the BTC is leaving into solutions like this, because again, if this is successful, other people will do it. And I believe it will be. We believe it will be successful. Then the reality is they have to adopt it, or their hands are tied and then nobody uses them, because it's just a trust model. And you shouldn't have to trust one of them.
Yeah, to provide a little color on the FTX thing, it was a $10 billion hole, some roughly, which means that there were many people who thought they were holding in total $10 billion worth of Bitcoin on FTX, when in reality, that Bitcoin had been sold into other altcoins via Alameda, the attached hedge fund. And so people who thought that they had taken the step into Bitcoin had actually contributed towards sell pressure on Bitcoin and had boosted altcoins just because they chose FTX and trusted FTX as the place to keep their Bitcoin.
Yeah. And you've been around a lot longer than us, Marty. So you've seen these shenanigans play out for a very long time. And so there will be other players doing exactly what Jesse just described in the next run.
No, it's inevitable until, like you guys said, you guys set the standard that acts as a forcing function for other players to act virtuously. And virtuous probably isn't the right word, but to act appropriately and on behalf of their customers. Like, at the end of the day, if I look at the solution, I mean, obviously I hold my own keys. I'm comfortable with that. I don't fit into the archetype of the type of Bitcoiner that you guys are trying to get in or where they are in their journey. I'm much further down the path than they are right now, but I will be extremely excited to recommend OnRamp to the high net worth individual in my life who's been wanting to get into Bitcoin, isn't comfortable with Coinbase, isn't comfortable holding their own keys. It's an easy, yes, here's a solution. It leverages Bitcoin's native multisig properties. You can audit the chain. You have certainty that you actually have Bitcoin. You can verify that. You have distributed risk with different key holders right now between different institutions here in the United States. In the future, hopefully different institutions that exist in different geographies and different jurisdictions to further distribute that risk. Like, it just makes sense. And then on top of that, another forcing function that you guys have, again, you're called on-ramp because you want to be the on-ramp to Bitcoin for these individuals, where at the end of the journey, you guys are Bitcoiners, you understand the importance of holding your own keys at some point toward the end of your journey. That's another forcing function that probably will be a massive net benefit for Bitcoin overall in the distribution of private key ownership in the long run, as you guys are educating people about, hey, this is just the first step. This is your on-ramp. We're going to teach you how to realize the full potential of Bitcoin and the full security of Bitcoin and the full benefits of Bitcoin by holding your own keys at some point in the future. I guess that's a good point to bring up to throw to you guys to explain, like, on the education side of things, like, what are the types of things that you'll be providing on-ramp's clients to get them comfortable, to educate them, to get them more confident in Bitcoin, just as an asset that they want exposure to, and then eventually that they want to possess themselves.
Yeah, I think to start, it's kind of like, what is our educational mission, and what have we, you know, through Michael and I talking about this last 8 months and sharing our experiences from two different sides of the Bitcoin industry over the last few years. You know, what are the sticking points? What's the thing you have to get through in your first few years of being in Bitcoin? And the first thing is you got to make it through your first cycle, because it's a crazy asset. This landscape is unlike anything that you're familiar with from the stock market, and you arrive on these foreign shores, and there's insane marketing from people like BlockFi promising things that seem too good to be true, but they're saying it and they're backed by the right people. And so you might fall for it, and you might get sucked into, you might be pulled off the path, the righteous path of making it through the Bitcoin journey to self-custody. You might get pulled into altcoins. You might get pulled into yield products. You might get freaked out when Bitcoin drops 50% overnight, which happens and will probably happen again at some point. You might get freaked out and sell the bottom. And so I think our first responsibility that we've learned over the last few years in terms of education is to be that outsourced confidence and conviction to help people understand what it takes to hold through a cycle and why they're holding. And so I think that's the first challenge in terms of Bitcoin education, as being a guide for people, holding their hand. Yeah, you got them to allocate dollars, but now the work begins of showing them why and reminding them why, without being annoying about it, why they're holding this and what it is going to take. They're going to have to withstand some volatility in order to reap the rewards of this incredible store value asset that gets more valuable over time. So that's, I think, the first real objective for us as in terms of education. And then, you know, as people get more comfortable and they learn more, then they become more ready to learn about self-custody and other issues about, like, inheritance or, you know, what their options are in terms of, you know, all of these things. And so that comes second in my mind. And Michael, you can talk about how we're trying to do that.
Yeah. I mean, I think two parts. It's like, I've been convinced that independent of what the business does in this space, they're an education company first. These are still so early, and until you can educate on why the product or value prop exists, like, it doesn't matter anything secondhand. And then the second part is, this has really been a journey, like, as we've gone through it, and just the maze of understanding our own logic, the market's logic. And there's this number that it's based off nothing, but I hold it to be true, or directionally true, that over 50% of people that have bought in Bitcoin since its inception don't hold it anymore. And the thought is it's very easy to buy Bitcoin, but it's extremely hard to hold it, whether it's through the volatility, rug pulls, exchange hacks, insolvencies, rehypothecation, you know, trying to get yield. And so to Jesse's point, like the first thing is this is something that you want this form of custody or to think about custody in this model. It's not like a share where somebody hacks it. You can just print it back or pull it back in your exchange account. And then also this is why it cuts in half, because of supply demand, all the things we all know, really helping them get through and understand that. So they basically can hold it through the volatility, because the realization is most people don't get to see a return, or the return that we know exists, because it's not a trade. It's the last trade. It's the thing you're going into, and you're protecting your wealth and a store of value. And most people are just chasing. It's what it's the old quote. It's like Bitcoin is a get rich slow scheme dressed up as a get rich quick scheme. But most people invert that, and then they sell it because they're like, oh shit, like got to get rid of it. Or they double, and then they're like, everybody knows the person bought it 200 and sold it 400. And that's equally as bad as it doing in half and cutting it, right? It's probably even worse, because you had the right trade, but you just got it out too early.
Yeah.
Yep. Michael, yeah, Michael likes to say, we're in the business of saving people from making a 2x.
It's true. I mean,
don't want that outcome.
No, we get this a lot. I mean, Michael, we get this a lot of 1031 where people are like, oh, how are you guys going to outperform Bitcoin? It's like, well, we do think we're going to find equity stakes, but also locking capital up in a venture vehicle for 10 years is a good way to hold on to exposure where many people would sell too early at some point within that 10-year time frame.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, it's interesting, like how our minds trail off, because there's like two versions of that. There's one of like, well, how can Bitcoin work? Because if everybody is getting rich or wealthy and purchasing power, then they're never going to sell. And that's crazy, because we have needs and wants, and you transfer your Bitcoin for those. And then there's the other version where it's like, well, I'm going to always hold it to that point. So why would I go anywhere else or that? And it's like, well, the reality is that the market hasn't shown that, like, people have needs and wants, or they just, you know, they go into different solutions. So there's this real difficulty in like this alien technology, what this effectively turned into, and then how do you like actually think about it? And it's until you can like have the pattern recognition, and it's only a function of time, right? This is basically what we're talking about, is accelerating somebody's time and proof of work. And so letting the people that have done it and have the vision that, not to say we know everything, but we've seen it play out. We had the slide at 1031 where it showed 6 months to 12 months ago, it was about like eight companies that were $100 billion plus, and everybody said we were crazy for trying to, you know, position Bitcoin versus the Solana and FTX of the world. It's effectively zero in enterprise value. Similar to 6 or 8 months ago, we were talking about all these different things, and BlockFi goes down, and we see the GBTC dislocation and Genesis and Gemini. Like, we can see these things because you've just been around long enough. And so rather than somebody coming in and getting rugged or selling at that 2X, we're just here to support and give them the different tools that are native to like what's happening here, and not trying to just think about own self-interest.
Yeah. It's a bit funny. It's like, hey, we recognize this once in a species opportunity, and we're benefiting from it, but we really want you to benefit. It's like, it's almost counterintuitive for most people. Like in this fiat world that we live in, it's always like, how it is. In this rent seeking world, like, how can I get a buck out of you? How can I buck? It's like, no, I think as many humans as possible need exposure to Bitcoin. We're trying to make it as easy as possible for you. We're going to educate you. Like, it seems like you guys are actually trying to help. Of course, capitalists make money as well, but it's much different to the Coinbase of the world, where you go on to the first screen of the app, you can't even find Bitcoin. You have to scroll like 10 or 11 pages to find it.
Yeah. And that's the crux of it here, is like, you know, telling people why Bitcoin only, and conveying that educational message, that's hard. But then there's you guys both touched on how this is such a foreign way of thinking, because it's this asset that is deflationary, in the sense that if you hold it, your purchasing power grows over time. Everything in the future costs less than it does today. And that changes behavior. So that that's completely the opposite of how we've been conditioned as a as individuals and as a society to operate now. We get money in, a dollar is worth more today than it will be tomorrow. So we spend it, we buy the thing that we want. And obviously with Bitcoin, it's the opposite. So it changes your consumption behavior. You're going to spend less on things you don't really need. You're still going to buy the things you do need. And that is part of this educational journey with Bitcoin. And obviously a soapbox I like to get up on with my content that I put out of, you know, you have to think about this in a different way. Yes, it's a volatile asset, but it's an asset that grows your purchasing power the longer you hold it. If you can make it through successive cycles, that is how you get rich slowly. And it's painful 90% of the time. But this is what you're signing up for, and it makes sense because of these mechanics underneath all of it. So there's a lot to educate on. And part of that is, you know, OnRamp's content strategy is going to be multifaceted. We've already established that we're going to have regular newsletters and educational pieces from me and from other writers that we'll be syndicating, and some pretty awesome folks in the space in particular. And then on top of that, we're also going to be having a regular drumbeat of things going on in the market that Michael, you maybe want to tee up for everyone.
Yeah, I think Jesse alluded to some of the content we're putting out. We have one of the things that I'm most excited about, or we're most excited about launching this is, I think that so far in this space, we talked about the funds, and there's the crypto side that are, you know, coming from traditional finance and really just seen as an opportunity to extract value. And then the other side where we have the Bitcoin ethos. And this is, in my mind, one of the first times we've like mirrored both. And so we have folks from BNY Mellon, former Green and Light Capital, Bain & Co., CoinShares, and on the advisor board to really support that saw this vision and realized that they were, you know, something that they needed, that their network needed, and they plan to really help on not only the content, but also just really opening up their network so we can really expand this offering from keys to different sub-custodial agreements. But then also part of that, something we've been discussing and thinking in the market is really needed this mix between the traditional world and the Bitcoin world. But how do we pull forward? Because the reality is the traditional world's a lot larger than this Bitcoin world and finance, and also just like human and intellectual capital. And so we're going to launch a podcast called The Last Trade, which will be myself, Jesse, Marty, and then we'll have a revolving third guest to talk about the macro market landscape, different happenings in the Bitcoin world, and how it maps to the traditional world, whether it's tech, venture, finance. And that'll be yours truly, Marty Bent, being the host, you know, putting something on his plate if he didn't have enough already. But we're really excited about it.
Yeah, I am too. What's another podcast? You know, I love recording the podcast.
Yeah, Marty, how do you feel about this extra helping of mashed potatoes that's landed on your plate now?
I mean, I love it. I was telling you guys before we hit record, I'm really excited about it because it's going to force me to stay as sharp as possible on the macro stuff and what's going on in the traditional financial system, applying that to Bitcoin. That's something my wife may not be as happy, but I always, that's the one thing with the content, with writing the newsletter. Jesse, you know this. Michael, you will learn this as you become part of a podcast. Is like it forces you to level up because people only come back if you're providing value. You can only provide value if you know what you're talking about to some degree. So this is going to force me to stay sharp and to stay on top of things. Not that I haven't been, but an extra bit of motivation never hurts.
Well, what better transition than somebody that's provided extreme value to the space? Our first, we have to figure out what the term is for revolving guests, but Parker, right before walking in the comments, committed to being the first guest, only if it was the first guest. So we got to, you know, this is the first one. We'll have him on and we'll see if we can get him back. But next Friday, that'll have Parker joining.
That'll drop. Yeah, I'm really excited for that. And I'm just excited for you too. Again, I've been watching from an arm's length and obviously having a lot of conversations with you guys over the last 6 to 8 months about building this out. And I'm really impressed, not only by you two as individuals, but you two putting your minds together and getting on-ramp together in a relatively short amount of time and buttoning up to a point that I think it's going to be, again, like we said earlier, it's going to set the standard, a new standard moving forward. I think it's extremely good for Bitcoin. I think it's extremely good for individuals getting access to Bitcoin for the first time. I think this is a massive net benefit. And again, said it many times on this episode, many times in the past, but the future of finance, banking, investing on a Bitcoin standard is going to revolve around multisig, and you guys getting this out there is going to be a massive nudge in that direction. Obviously, we have to shout out Unchained, Promily Unchained, for really setting the standard for individual multisig custody. But I think to unlock that archetype that we've been describing throughout this conversation, this is exactly what people need.
Yeah, that's a good point and reminder. There's some really, props to give out for a few folks. One that I didn't mention on our advisor list is Jeff Vandrew, who's the general counsel at Unchained. He is a wizard. He's been on pods before with Marty, but when it comes to legal and Bitcoin mine, just incredible. He founded Keykeeper IRA, which was acquired by Unchained. Now he's the general counsel. Help us put the structure together and really think through a lot of the mechanics. Joe Kelly, CEO of Unchained, you know, when we approached him with this, he was for it, understood it was a different market. It was a net benefit for the space, Unchained, and us building this business and really showcasing Unchained's capabilities from an infrastructure. And then you and Parker as well, you know, just riffing on these ideas. We've talked about it. We've gotten feedback and, you know, you're onto something when like Bitcoiners are like, oh yeah, that makes sense. These were pretty skeptical and adversarial in nature. And so it's been great to riff on it as well with you, along with Jesse and everybody else on the sidelines.
Yeah. So beyond this episode, where can people go to learn more about OnRamp?
Yeah, we have a website. You can, if you're like me and you like to see it to understand things like this, you can go to onrampbitcoin.com and take a look around and see. We have our announcement post there that runs down why we're doing this, what its features are, and how it differentiates and improves upon what's out there. And you can take a look at the team that we've assembled to do this, and you know, get a little bit more familiar with the custody model. And then you can get in touch with us. So, you know, if you want to talk more about this, whether it's for you, an institution you're a part of, or, you know, for most people, this is going to be something that if you're listening to, you know, to Marty's podcast, you've already solved this problem for yourself, but there's probably somebody in your life who is not yet ready for Bitcoin self-custody, or, you know, somebody in your network. And this could be something for them. And we'd love to talk to you about getting in touch with that person and getting them started in Bitcoin the right way.
Yeah, that's a good call. I'd encourage anybody. I think this unlocks a lot of other financial use cases for Bitcoin. So whether you're at a financial institution, wanting them to hold a key, participate, feedback, we're still very much in the education phase when it comes to this in institutions. So happy to chat with them. But yeah, this is still very early. And so there's a on the website to schedule time or just to submit feedback. We'd love it.
I should also mention, this product is, you know, what we had to do to build this, is a particular type of fund model, that is for accredited investors. And as part of that, the minimum that we have is $100,000. So this is not for the people who are looking to put $5,000 and they don't trust Coinbase. This is for folks who are looking to deploy a little bit more capital, just as a heads up to everyone.
Yeah. No, and again, one parting note. I think what you guys are building, again, talk about multisig, but like highlights the beauty of Bitcoin, the open source nature, is being able to build this product, leveraging Bitcoin's open source code. And then provide, like, that's what Bitcoin needs right now. Like, obviously, with TFTC and RHR, for 6 years at TFTC, 5 years at RHR, We've been really beating the drum, self-custody, self-custody, self-custody. Many of you listening to this right now already do self-custody. But again, if we want to take Bitcoin to the next level in terms of like really integrating it into our financial system, whether you like it or not, these solutions need to exist. The optionality needs to exist. I, as a cypherpunk who really gets a lot of peace of mind holding my own keys, is comfortable doing that, but it would be ignorant of me not to acknowledge the millions and millions of people with a ton of capital out there who do not have the same confidence that I do. And so just providing this option to the market with the eventual call option to take self-custody in the future, I think is, again, incredible. And I'm extremely excited for you guys and very appreciative to be on this ride with you as an advisor and as a as the host of The Last Trade.
Yeah, we're excited.
We're super excited to have you, Marty. I'm pumped to just riff on business and Bitcoin next week on The Last Trade and kick that off.
And ideally, we get Jesse down to Austin sooner rather than later. We can all do it in person in this nice, beautiful studio. Get Parker in here. Nice Friday afternoon. Have some drinks. Send our wives out to happy hour.
We're gonna get four cameras in there too, so we can each sit in the corner of the room. And we'll have good camera structure and be done nice and right.
We're just gonna egg Parker on being like the revolving guest every week, and then he's just he's a co-host.
Yeah. You heard it here first, Parker. You may not know it yet, but you are the fourth host of The Last Trade. Gentlemen, number one, congratulations. Number two, let's go out there and orange pill the world. I think you guys are going to be a potent orange pill for some very important people.
Let's do it.
Yeah, here's hoping. Yeah, we're ready. We're ready to bring that water main of capital into this infinitely expandable blueberry. Let's go.
Go. You heard it here first. Go forth, prosper. Enjoy your weekend, freaks. Peace and love.